I'm here with Jeff Carr, a candidate for New Mexico's lieutenant governor in the 2018 race. Welcome.
Thank you.
Jeff, you have a background in education. You served in the military in varying capacities. You've done a lot of things. Do you want to discuss what made you decide that you wanted to run for this particular office?
Well, I decided to run for this office because, I'll say first of all, it's because of the situation we have with education in the state of New Mexico. Teaching 27 years, I am on the front lines with our children, and I see the effects of high-stakes standardized testing on our children, the lack of funding for all of our programs, and especially the ones that we know that work, the cutbacks from K-12 through junior college systems, like here at UNM Gallup. There's been cutbacks all across the state that have truly hurt our children and will hurt their success in the future. We also need to add early childhood education to the mix for our education, because we know that's a program that is has been proven to be truly successful now for students, not only in the next coming grades in elementary school, but children who go to early childhood programs are more likely to graduate from high school, more likely to attend college and finish college, and more likely to be more successful and even happier in their adult life. I come to this situation in a sense of service. I was raised by a single mother who, she was a riveter in World War II and the bombers. My dad was a disabled World War II veteran who died when I was 4 years old. My mother taught me the importance of education and how that's your way forward. When my dad was alive, we were doing pretty well. We were middle class. When he died, we were poor. On Social Security, overnight, and thank goodness for Social Security, and we got some veterans benefits too because of my dad's service, and thank God for that. And it's those types of programs are public schools, which have allowed people like me and people from across the country to be successful and given the opportunity, because for a lot of us, education, that's the only way out of a life of poverty and constant hard work, physical labor. I served in the military, in the Air Force. I was a nuclear weapons specialist, and worked with some of our Los Alamos scientists in the late 70s. I always thought I was going to die from radiation exposure, but I didn't. I'm pretty good, pretty healthy. I later joined the Army National Guard and became an officer and served as a platoon leader in a combat heavy engineer battalion. And I was a platoon leader. Most of the time we built things. We built buildings for colleges. We built a football field one time. We went to Panama and built a bridge and a road for the people down there, which was a great diplomatic service to the people in Central America, who don't always have high regards for us. I think, that is important. I served on the Public Education Commission for 8 years. Just stepped down from that in December to run for this. Was a vocal proponent for education, fighting this administration's cutbacks and programs that I think were actually hurting our children. First of all, I think we need to do no harm, and then we need to step forward. I think we need a 100-year plan, but there's something that we're going to get done every year in that. And then at the end of that 100 years, our children and great-grandchildren hopefully are going to be in a much better world than what we live in. I think it's important that we show respect, something this administration current administration has not done. And respect doesn't cost anything. And disrespect costs immeasurably. Like if you, an example of that would be if I told a child that they'll never amount to anything, if I did that, that horrible thing, that could stay with that child for the rest of their life. It may even lead them to suicide. On the other hand, if I build up a warm, loving relationship with those children, we know that they are ready to learn, they are encouraged, and I know, I don't know how many anecdotal stories where I can tell you or my students have come back and told me that, hey, Mr. Carr, you know what? I went to medical school because you said I could. And you said I could, and then it meant something to me. And when adults speak to children, those words are important, and they come back. My daughter repeats things that I say, that I've said to her as a child, and I wasn't sure she was listening, but she was listening, and it made a difference. My daughter works for the American Federation of Teachers in New Mexico. She's their communications specialist. She graduated with a double major in Spanish and communications from New Mexico State University. And we taught her the importance of education, and she is working diligently to improve education in our state as well through the American Federation of Teachers in New Mexico, of which I'm also a member, by the way.
We'll talk about some other aspects of the position of New Mexico's lieutenant governor in a little bit, but while we're on the subject of education, do you have a position? You mentioned issues such as, you know, suicide in youth. Mm-hmm. Do you have a position on how we address bullying, cyberbullying, that sort of thing?
Well, that's I don't. My whole life, I'm a big guy. I could be the guy that was the bully. For some reason or another, and maybe it was because of how I was raised. It's something that's extremely important to me. And I can start at an early age. I was going to an all-white elementary school in a rural area. And a child who was half Japanese and half American, matter of fact, the son of an American World War II veteran, and his mother was Japanese, was called horrible names and was mistreated. I stood by his side and made sure that he, and at least when I was with him, he was never bullied. And that's something that's important to me. I don't think people should all be treated with respect. And I maybe that comes from my grandfather, it comes from my mother. And I see it as a teacher for 27 years. My classroom has always been this habitat where people are a safe haven for people who are bullied. For being Native American, for being half Japanese, for being somebody that's a little different, you know, or dresses a little different, or maybe they're homeless and they can't take a shower every day, so people make fun of them, or they're a part of the LGBTQ community, and we have we have a lot of work to do in this regard. I had 4 students in my last 2 years of teaching who committed suicide. And I don't specifically think those were related to bullying, because at the school I taught at, in the relationship, but a lot of times it is. But there's other, you know, there's tons of other factors. There's drugs and there's problems at home and all these other things that would make a child want to commit suicide. And it's a horrendous thing. Of course, the child's life is over. For the family, the school community is devastated, and it's in Taos where I taught. The Gorge Bridge was a favorite place to commit suicide, unfortunately, and I know they're working on that. And we need to do everything we can to give children hope, and treating kids with love and understanding and making sure that they know that they have an opportunity for a happy life, giving them the counseling that they need, all these resources that have been cut back and hurt over the last 7 years or so, we need to restore and we need to build on them because they were never where they were supposed to be. But this administration has actually made the situation worse in that regard.
Not only the state administration, but certainly the national administration with Betsy DeVos in, you know, as that in that role. Traditionally, special needs children, children with learning disabilities or physical disabilities, were often isolated in the schools from the other children. There has been a trend toward mainstreaming. What is your philosophy with regard to mainstreaming?
Well, I think when they first started doing it, I was going, oh, I don't know. I haven't been trained to deal with this. And any time you make changes like that, it's, people are become uncomfortable. But you know what? It's good for those children, and it's good for the other children. You know, it's that they be part of the classroom, that be part of the group. And, you know, in the last 10 years or so, the kids are most of them are so good about being accepting and kind to children, other children with special needs. And we're certainly not doing enough for them either. I mean, we're not doing enough for any of our children. And certainly those children. And it costs money. You know, and we're the richest country in the world, and they say we're the poorest state in the country. I don't like terms like that because it's, you know, because we're rich in so many other ways, and there's a lot of money here. It's just a matter of finding revenue service sources that are diversified. We need to bring back the income tax for the extreme wealthy that was taken away in 2003, and even more of the conservatives, members of the legislature, are in favor of that now. You know, those monies are sorely needed. The data shows that if we just dumped a money for like 1 year or 6 months and said, hey, you know, here's some extra money, and then left, it doesn't work very well. But if we give the sustained amount of money to programs that we know work because we have the data to show it, and we sustain that over years, that's why I talk about my 100-year plan, then it can work. And the data shows that a sustained, appropriate amount of money to programs that work, that works. And we need to do that. And by putting our children first, that doesn't mean we put our teachers and our caregivers last. And that doesn't go hand in hand. And we have to make sure that the people who are on the front lines with their children, all educators, and I'm talking about custodians who have interaction with children, all the way up to principals and administrators, teachers, aides, cafeteria workers, all those people are part of a family that help children in a college setting. And we have to make sure that they have a living wage and that they can spend their time taking care of their children and not worrying about whether they're going to be able to pay the rent next month. And that's extremely important.
What do you see the role of lieutenant governor in any administration in New Mexico to be? What are the most important things that a lieutenant governor can do for the state, given that it's not the highest profile role? What is your job as lieutenant governor?
Well, constitutionally, your job is to take over from the governor when the governor leaves the state, or to break ties and preside over the Senate during the legislative session. The beauty of lieutenant governor is that the lieutenant governor, like vice president in some cases, maybe not in the current sense, but in past times, has a freedom to go out and support things like education. Diane Dennis, when she was lieutenant governor, she took on early childhood education and made many strides. Matter of fact, just opened up an early childhood center, I think, just a few weeks ago. She's still working on it. And I want to take that from early childhood, and I'm talking, and we're talking early childhood, we're talking birth on. And we've had so many extreme cuts in K-12 and in our college system that needs special attention and special care. And if we formed a committee, and if I do like what I'm doing now, I can do radio interviews, newspaper. I did a newspaper interview last night, just as I'm campaigning to win this office. If I do win this election, I will continue in that light, traveling around the state, listening to professional educators, and getting their ideas on how we can improve education, or whoever the new Secretary of Education will be, can be on board with this. And then it'll be my point to be that lobbyist, that special lobbyist for the people who can't pay millions of dollars for lobbyists, to go to the legislature and go to the governor. And I do have a good relationship with everybody that's running on the Democratic side anyway, and convince them that, hey, the professionals are saying we need to do this. And of course, nobody can make that decision alone. The governor can't do it alone. The governor has a lot of power over the public education department and can do some things just by executive order or by telling the Secretary of Education we need to do this. But the legislature has to get on board with funding and all the other things that we need. So it's a we thing. I think I have the lifetime experience in education and the heart to convince people that these are the things we need to work toward to help our children. And I think, early childhood, I think we can do quickly. Ending the high-stakes standardized testing, we can do it immediately. There's some things we can do right away and get done in the first year. And then we can start building from there and start fixing the things that were broken way before this administration, because we've never adequately funded education in this country. And just a really quick note, most people, there's a misunderstanding out there that some people think that we spend more money per child than any other country in the world. That's simply not true. The last studies that I saw was that we were 26th in spending per child. So it is simply not true that we spend more money than any other country in the world. That's one of the many things, pieces of propaganda that's placed out there by people who don't support public education and probably want to privatize it.
Jeff, assuming that you win the primary next spring, mm-hmm. and I think that's in June?
It's June 5th.
June mm-hmm. 5th, yes. How do you foresee communicating with the gubernatorial nominee, the Democratic nominee, to begin the process of planning for the contingency of a win, mm-hmm. So that the transition will be smooth and so that you can see a way to work together?
Yeah, and I've already, I started the conversations with everybody who I thought was thinking about running over a year and a half ago. And with many other people, I said, I called Senator Tom Udall, and who I've known for years and always supported. And I said, I'm thinking about running for lieutenant governor. What do you think? You think I'd be a good? And he says, well, I think, he didn't endorse me. He doesn't endorse anybody, but and every one of them said, I think you'd be a good candidate. I think you'd be a good one. And I've talked to him about education. I know Michelle Lujan Grisham is on board with what I want to do with education. I haven't had the conversation with Jeff Apodaca, but I'm pretty sure, and we've developed a good relationship, because I had no idea he was running until, he finally got it announced. I'm the kind of person who likes to build bridges and likes to work with people, realizing I can't get everything that I want. but hopefully we get at least part of what I want and part of what we need. I always prided myself on getting along with people and being able to express to people why we need to maybe do things in a certain way. And I don't think I'll have any problem working with whoever wins the Democratic nomination for governor.
Whoever is elected in the primaries, the New Mexico legislature is predominantly Democratic. And while traditionally we've had both Republicans and Democrats in administration, might be easier to work with legislature if there is a Democrat.
Well, yeah, the current minority leader in the Senate, Stuart Engel, who's been there over 30 years, said he's never worked with a governor that was so hard to work with, and he's a Republican, and he knows, we don't agree on probably most things, but you know what, he's a reasonable guy most of the time, and this particular administration hasn't worked well with even members of her own party, and certainly that will change. And we need a governor and a lieutenant governor who's constantly walking the halls and talking to senators and representatives, and they're with them, not thinking that I'm not good, I'm too good to be there or something. It's got to be a situation where we're working together as equals to better the lives of people in New Mexico. And and I've gone to the legislature and lobbied for education for children for almost two decades, and most of them know me by name. I have a good working relationship with almost all of them, and with that I've already built, and I feel that they respect me as well. I think we can make a lot of strides to work together in the future in another year, less than a year and a half.
What is your philosophy with regard to transparency, with regard to being upfront with any aspects of your practice, your work ethic, your background for that matter, and not to try to dodge issues?
I from the start of this campaign, I decided, I'm not going to follow the old line political thing that people, that they kind of hold things to the close to the vest, or they don't want to say. My platform is in the form of a blog on my website. If there's something there that's not clear, I believe in being perfectly clear and telling people exactly how I feel about things and what I intend to do, so they know who they're voting for. This old-fashioned thing of not doing that, that's got to be a thing of the past. I think this last election proved that we need to do things differently. We need to be totally transparent about who we are, what we are, and what we're doing. And I'll certainly, if I win this election, it'll be the same thing then. I'll be working for the people. And if I'm working for the people, they need to know what I'm doing. They don't need to know maybe what I had for dinner, but if they want to know, I'll tell them.
Hector Balderas, Attorney General, decided against a run for governor, is going to run for re-election for Attorney General, has been very active in many ways in progressive areas, environmentalism, methane emissions, transgenders in the military, a lot of issues out there, in addition to the traditional aspects, law and order issues, protecting seniors, protecting, low income, et cetera. But you're not in an enforcement role as lieutenant governor. You are in a role of leading. How do you interact with the governor in doing that? Do you foresee communicating with each other to make sure that any public statement you make is in line with what the governor is saying?
I certainly wouldn't want to go out there and embarrass anybody. And I've been known to put my foot in my mouth occasionally. My wife and my daughter have told me. I'm probably like Joe Biden. I'll probably be kind of like a Joe Biden every once in a while. I might say the wrong thing, you know, or something, but I'm trying to be careful. You know, it's I always thought his heart was in the right place regardless. You know, but when it comes down, there's certain things, you know, if I won't be censored, if there's certain things that I think need to be said, I don't think the governor would hold me back. You know, I'm an independent person, and if I feel strongly enough about something, then I will speak out, even if somebody doesn't want me to. On the other hand, I have a great relationship with Hector Balderas. I've on the Public Education Commission, I was told many things that needed to be referred to his office that I couldn't handle. I've known Hector since he first ran for the state legislature. He was my representative in the state legislature. And I'm usually in pretty good communication with him. And he's doing a fine job. He's also trying to protect our national monuments as well. And unfortunately, he's having to spend a lot of time to fight what this current the Trump administration is trying to do.
Yeah, Zinke Interior Department. Yes.
So it's we all need to work together. There's a really good group of Democrats, right? And Maggie Toulouse Oliver's Secretary of State. I know her quite well, and she's doing a fantastic job. And we all need to have this intercommunication. You know, there's. Technically, they're kind of part of the cabinet in a way, you know, even though they're elected, but they're independent and we need to talk with each other. Tim Eichenberg, our state treasurer, hopefully, I guess we are going to get a new land commissioner one way or the other. Hopefully we have a great land commissioner that we can all work with as well. And I think in a spirit of cooperation and thinking about New Mexico first and not thinking about us, if I was only thinking about myself, I wouldn't be running for office unless I was a crook, I guess. And I'm not. And now I'm sounding like Richard Nixon.
I do think that in New Mexico, at least in recent history, there has been a tendency for the different parties in the legislature to be able to work together.
Yes.
Much more so than is the case right now in Washington. But as you say, there is an issue with being able to work with the governor at this
right,
point.
Of course.
That hopefully will change.
Yes. I hope so. And I think it's going to mean, and that's why, you know, when I get to the general election, God willing, I will work diligently to get a Democratic governor elected in the next election. I think it's imperative. I think it's absolutely necessary. I think the other choice is just like Donald Trump, and I can't I can't imagine. And I think if Steve Pearce gets elected, I think we're going to have another 8 years that are just as bad, if not worse, than under Susana Martinez. And everything has gone down. There's no saving grace unless you try to make up some kind of statistic. There's nothing there for her to say, hey, that's a feather in my cap. Nothing. And just like the current administration, 7 months, nothing. Which in some cases is kind of good. Because I disagree with most of everything he wants to do.
Well, again, if you are elected in June, odds are you're going to be on the road campaigning as much for the Democratic gubernatorial nominee as for yourself.
Yes.
You're not going to have much time to yourself. So
no.
How are you going to manage the downtime necessary to refresh yourself and to control stress.
Yeah, you know what I do now? I try to eat a very healthy diet. When I'm on the road, I try to eat it's hard to eat healthy, but I try to eat a salad. I try to eat a salad at every meal if I can. And I try to walking. I did a lot of walking yesterday, visiting the National Monument and the volcano and the ice cave out there.
Yeah. El Morro.
Yeah, El Morro, and that's a beautiful sight. And and I think it's important. That's one of the few. There's only one national monument in New Mexico I haven't been to, and it's down close to Mountaineer, and I can't even think of the name of it right now. And it's, I think it's important that I, as a candidate traveling around the state, also go visit those sites, because those are important parts of our history, our culture, for education, for tourism. And so I get to know the state, and I get to know the people, and I get to know the land as well. So, I try to work things. I try not to stay on the road. This is about a 5-day trip for me. This is my 31st county, and I had an event last night, and by the end of the day today, I will have had events in 33 counties, some of them 4 or 5 times. But I try to go home for 2 or 3 days, I'm still doing things and making phone calls, but at least I'm home and with my 2 cats, my dog, and my wife. He's still teaching second grade, and she will come to certain select events. But self-care, that's important for all of us. And I've always told teachers coming in, because we lose half of them in 5 years, even before this. I mean, it's probably more than that now. A big part of it is self-care. I said, you need to take care of yourself. You can't, I just say this, you can't take care of others if you don't take care of yourself. That's important.
How could you summarize the discussion with your family when you were considering running for lieutenant governor?
Oh, well, we had a big family meeting at Christmas, and over Christmas dinner, actually. They knew I was thinking about it. I wasn't going to do it if they weren't on board. And especially my wife, and because I told her, I said, if this ever, this is a situation where this is not working with our relationship, then family comes first to me, and they were on board. I do some talking first, explain everything, but I had my mother and my father are gone. I lost my mother last year, so. My mother always, I think because of John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, she was always scared for me to be in politics because she thought somebody would kill me. But she's no longer around, but, everybody supports me, and, everybody's on board with it. And my father-in-law is my treasurer, and my campaign is, mostly volunteers right now. It was a good heart-to-heart, and they asked a lot of questions, and it wasn't immediate. Yeah, it wasn't an immediate yes, but it ended up being a yes.
This is a major commitment financially, just the process of running and the fact that you have to fundraise. It makes for a very difficult time for many candidates. So how are you managing?
It's early on in the race, so people aren't that excited about getting involved yet. It usually just kind of picks up exponentially, and I realize that. I've been involved in statewide campaigns. I helped Gary King when he ran, and of course I run for office myself, and it's and it's not fun asking people for money, but I don't mind doing it. I'm not taking any money from corporations, unless I think they're a good corporation, and I'm taking money from individual donors. I expect to get endorsements from many unions, and that's okay, and they will help mostly not with money, but with phone calls and boots on the ground. And it's, you know, you just have to keep calling and you have to ask. And every place I go, I tell them. I cover my own travel expenses, and then but I'm trying to build up my campaign money for materials and stationery and things like that. I do have a video out on YouTube that's professionally done. Just Jeff Carford, Lieutenant Governor, you'll find it. It's got over 10,000 views, I believe, now. And I sing and play the guitar, and I write music, and in fact, you can hear me perform on that video as I tell you why I want to be Lieutenant Governor.
Are you writing your own campaign song?
Well, that is my campaign song, I suppose. It's called Beauty's Glimpse, and it's about the beauty of the landscape of New Mexico. You could probably confuse it for a love song, but it's a love song about the land.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good reason to run for office in New Mexico, I would think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today, Jeff?
Well, you know, I could give you a quick laundry list of what I support. And I'm a strong environmentalist. It's important to protect our land and our air. I support renewable energy and investing in that. I think we, after doing a lot of research, I think we need to legalize cannabis. And hemp is, I think, legalized now. The bill that was vetoed got overturned in court. So I think we have hemp now. I'm not sure. Nobody knows for sure how that's going to work at this point. But I support that. If we look in Colorado, that money's, I think they've raised close to $1 billion. And a lot of that, most of that's going into education, and I'm well aware of drug issues. I've seen my kids involved with horrible drugs. The teenage use in Colorado, though, has actually gone down. The crime has actually gone down. You still have to be 21. They follow the liquor laws just almost identically. And I think it's something that... that has very little downside and a lot of upside. So, you know, besides education, there's all these other issues and things that I do support. I consider myself a FDR Democrat. You can also call me a progressive, and as a history teacher, that means going way back that we fought against child labor, 40-hour work week, equal rights for women, and clean living spaces, progressive simply means to move forward in a positive way to make everybody's life better. And so that's me, I guess, in a little bit, in a nutshell.
Now, I'm looking at your business card, and the website URL is a little involved. So
yeah, it's difficult.
So maybe the simplest thing would be for people to go to a web browser and search for Jeff Carr.
For Lieutenant Governor. And I've got a great Facebook. I put most of my events on the Facebook page. But if you want to see my blog, yes, it's definitely the website has the most details. And I welcome any questions. You may email me and you may call me.
Do you want to mention the number?
Sure.
Okay.
575-770-0335. That's my personal cell phone number. Please be kind.
So please no robocalls, 575-770-0335. Mm-hmm. If you have some pertinent questions or concerns you want to share with Jeff Carr, mm-hmm. Democratic candidate for New Mexico Lieutenant Governor, election coming up June 5th, 2018.
All right.
Thank you so much, sir, for coming by.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you for having me.